See, because the heroes that we read in a book are not real. They're not real at all. The heroes we see in everyday life is real. And who are they? They're just like you and me, except they're not afraid to be wrong. They're not afraid to admit their mistake, and they're not afraid that they're afraid. And they do it anyway. Because the rest of us are afraid to admit, the rest of us don't want to show our fears, but we don't do it. We make up some lame excuse, we make up something to cover the fear, or the embarrassment, or the shame, or the ego, and then we just don't do it. So those are not heroes. So let me stress, heroes are not people who don't have fear. They're people who have fear and they go ahead and do it because they think, what can I lose? What can I lose in the end? So for particularly KMP departments, for KMP departments to be very successful, it's more than just getting a building, because a building has loans and we have to get our money and we have to pay it, all that stuff. It will happen. People will donate. People will give. And if you do your work really well, people will come along and just give. How do I know that? Because that's how I've been doing for the last 16 years. I raised so much money, it's incredible. And when I began raising money, I don't have any qualifications to raise money. I don't have anything. I have nothing in me that can raise money. I don't have a company, I don't have a business, you know, I don't have education, I'm not invested. Why would people give money? But if you're sincere, people will feel it. Sincere means what? Is you say what you mean, and you mean what you say. That's one, no matter how you look. And I think that's the principle of Buddhism. People like Milarepa had no money, didn't want sponsors, didn't want to live in a great monastery, and was very not inclined toward having students or fame or to be discovered. And he was not excited to have people come and meet him for divinations or teachings and all that. So what Milarepa did was, when he went to look for a place to meditate caves, he went as far as he can, high as he can, as distant and as as far as he can from civilization. He did that. And was that word recluse? No.
Hermit.
Secluded.
Secluded. He wants to be as secluded as possible. And that's so different than some meditators who, they want people to know, oh, I'm a great meditator, come and make offerings to me, come see me, and you know, I want to look like I'm holy, I'm not attached. Actually, they are. But in Milarepa's case, he wasn't. He was not attached at all. So he looked for meditation places that were very, very secluded. And he didn't have money. He didn't have wealth. He did not look for big sponsors. He made offerings every single day. And the outer offerings he made was the mandala. And the mandala offerings that someone like Milarepa made was visualizing the outer mandala, which is the whole world, and all the environments, and all the beings therein, complete. And he would make an offering of that to the Buddha. Then he would offer his attainments to the Buddha, because he had gained some attainments before he became a Buddha. And he also offered his negative points to the Buddha. And you might think that this is some psychological kind of game. It is not. It is not a psychological kind of game. Why? How can we offer negative things to the Buddha? Because the Buddha can never be defiled. So when we offer up something so-called negative to the Buddha, we don't own that negativity anymore. When we don't own that negativity anymore, then we start to disidentify with it. We start to go away from identifying that quality with us. So if we're angersome, if we're greedy, if we're hateful, if we're jealous, if we're vengeful, when we keep offering these things up, in the beginning it is imaginary. It is imaginary. But when we keep offering it up, it becomes real. Why? Because we create the causes for it, and we're studying, and we're practicing, and our mind is identifying what should be offered up. So eventually, offering those negative qualities up become realistic. Why? Because we start to distance ourselves from it into gradual process. And you think, what's the big deal? It is a big deal, because what else are we doing to distance ourselves from those qualities? And those are the qualities that make us unpopular, that make people lose respect for us, that make people not like us, that make people, we want to be with people, but they don't want to be with us. And when people don't respect us, they don't like us, or they're suspicious of us, we have to work harder to cover our tracks. We have to work harder to cover ourselves. We have to work harder to cover our face. We have to work harder and be more innovative for people to like us. And you know what? It becomes more and more and more and more work. After a while, you'll be discovered anyway. Because as my teacher said, no matter how intelligent you are, there's someone out there who eventually will be smarter than you. So therefore, what's very important is if we would stop playing games out of the hatred, the jealousy, the anger, the vengeance, instead of playing into these games, we should do ourselves to come out of it. And how? The first step is to open about it. I am jealous. I am angry. I made a mistake. I have fears. I am stingy. I can't rejoice for myself. And when we make that kind of confession, and it's from our heart, we feel lighter. It becomes easier. Why? A, we don't have to have defenses against people anymore. We don't have to defend. Because people already know that about us. And when they know that about us, in the beginning, initially, we look really bad. But when they know us more and more, and they realize that we're coming out with our problem, they respect us. It's like someone who drinks and drinks and drinks and drinks, and they're drunk, and they're drinking all the time, they smell like alcohol, they don't take care of their responsibility. They say, hey, you know, so-and-so, you're an alcoholic. He says, no, I'm not. And he denies it. He denies the obvious. What happens is, not only do we know he's an alcoholic, we also lose respect for him, and he loses friends. So someone who says, yes, I am an alcoholic, and I've been looking for help, and I haven't been very successful, and I ask all of you to forgive me. I am an alcoholic, and I'm sorry for the pain I'm causing. And everybody be like, ew, you know, you're an alcoholic. But when they confess that, they're an alcoholic, things change. Why do things change? Because two factors. One is you confess, and they can't get you on that point anymore. And people won't be looking for you, and people won't look for your defenses anymore. Second is, you're actually asking for help. So that's why support groups such as Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, you know, people who've lost families, and all these, they have all these support groups, substance abuse. The support groups are so popular and so accepted that you can go into a room full of hundreds of strangers, confess your most deep, most inner fears and what you hide. And why do people do that? Because those are filled with the other people in the room who've come out who've been honest. Why can't we talk about things with our mother and our father and our sisters and brothers and our close friends? Because they're not people who came out honestly either. But we can go into a room and honestly say that because these people have been honestly came out for the truth. So if we can go into a room filled with people who tell the truth and we can be honest because we know they've confessed it. If we do that with our friends, if we do that with the people around us, the whole demographics change. Why does it change? We create an atmosphere of honesty. We create an atmosphere of support. We create an atmosphere of that you're honest. Instead of atmosphere of hiding. So what's very important is if we offer up these negative qualities that are with us every single day in our mandala offerings, we sincerely offer them, we'll see ourselves disassociating. That's one. Second is you keep reminding yourself that you have those qualities. Third is, if you're around Dharma students and Dharma, that's why we live in Dharma houses, we have a Dharma community, we have a Sangha community, and we support each other. Why is that? Because we're religious fanatics, because we can't deal with the real world? No. Actually, we can deal with the real world really well. Most of us here can deal with the real world really, really well. But that's not the issue. The issue is, are we just dealing with the real world as a cover for dealing with ourselves? And that's the secret. Are we dealing with the real world really well to cover ourselves? So, if anyone has anything good, they have good parents, which I don't, sorry to say, they have a nice car, they have nice sponsors, or they have nice friends, or they have money, or they have a good body, or they have good appearance, or, you know, they have knowledge. When we come across those people, the initial primeval feeling is, I want it. I should have it. I'm not happy. I need it. Let me get it. So different people have different approaches. Some people say, oh, you have that, and I don't. They're looking at you. It's annoying. Some people are like, oh, you know, let's be friends, but underneath, they want to get you. People have different approaches. So what I'm trying to say is, when people have these good qualities, it is definitely the result of their good karma. If it is the result of their good karma, if we're jealous, we contradict the law of good karma. Why do we contradict and we break our vow? Why do we contradict? Because then if we do good things and people are not happy with us, we should not be unhappy. If we do good things, we produce a good book, or produce a good video, we produce a good website, or we've made a department grow, or we've done something really well worth praising, and people praise us, we are happy. When we are recognized by people that we've done something good, we're happy. Nobody at this table, if they've worked really hard and they've given their best and they're not appreciated, they won't be happy. Nobody at this table. Henceforth, if another person has something really good and it's really wonderful, and we're not happy about it, and we're not happy, why do we expect other people to be happy for us? Why? How can we be not happy for other people's good fortune, and then when we do something good, we want them to be happy for us? We don't create the causes for that. So if you work very hard and you're very intelligent and you do a lot and you put in a lot of effort and people do not congratulate you and people do not respect you and people do not think good things about you. In fact, they might even twist it around and turn it into something that you didn't mean. If you're not happy about that, don't create the causes. So if one of your cohorts, one of your companions, or one of your co-workers in KMP or any department or anything in your life is having something good, they get to go to a movie, they go to get a gift, or they're close to someone that you like, or they get praises, you have to train yourself to rejoice. Why? If you don't train yourself to rejoice, if you don't train, you will create the causes that whatever you do will not reach fruition and no one will appreciate it. Why? Because someone else has something good and you're not appreciating. You are not appreciating. You yourself are burning with jealousy. You yourself are burning with unhappiness. You yourself are burning with dissatisfaction. And you are so burning with it that you will do something physical and outward to hide it, or to put the other person down, or to slap the other person down, or to take away from them what they're feeling at that moment. And that's very, very bad. Why is that very bad? Two counts. On a very superficial, outward level, you will lose their friendship eventually. Eventually, you will lose their friendship. Why would you lose your friendship? Why would people want to be friends with people who are always jealous of them? That's not a friend. A friend is they go through tough, thick and thin with you. A friend is not someone that sits there and giggles with you like and whispers when someone else talks and whispers and become close. That's not a friend at all. What's a friend is when you're sad, they are sincerely sad. And they sincerely want to take that away from you. That when good things are happening for you, they are happy that good things are happening for you. They're really happy. And if you're a really good friend, if you're really a good Dharma practitioner, you would offer what you have good for them. And in fact, if you have something good and they don't, you wouldn't be able to take it. If they have a better house, a better car, a better relationship, if they have better clothes, they have all these things better than you, you would rejoice. But if you have it better than them and they don't have it, you would not be comfortable. You would not be comfortable with it. You would not be happy with it. You will not be able to relax with it. You would not be able to enjoy it. In fact, if you have anything good, you will be very embarrassed and you'll be very shy and you feel very, very uncomfortable. Why? Because you truly wish others to have good things. And that's how you gauge people. How do you gauge people's practice without knowing it? How do you gauge? Is when you have something good and they don't, how do you react? That's how you gauge yourself. When you don't have something good and they do, how do you react? That's how you gauge yourself. So how well versed you are in the Dharma, how good you are in the ritual, you will not conquer people's minds. In fact, when you have that kind of attitude, a very strong jealousy, and you do ritual, the gods and spirits will attack you. Why? when you're doing those rituals, you're doing trisu or you're doing any kind of offerings to these gods, you're telling them don't be jealous. But you yourself are jealous. In the land god ritual itself, specifically for land blessings, specifically it says to the gods, them are the goddess of the earth, and especially the gods dwelling in this very region. Without jealousy, without anger, without fighting, without any kind of distress, share these offerings among each other, and by sharing these offerings without jealousy, may you have peace and happiness, and let this land be at peace because we're going to build here. So when you yourself is full of jealousy, and you're burning with jealousy, and you're enraged with jealousy, and you're just so uncomfortable with jealousy, how do you do that kind of ritual? It'll be ineffective. In fact, when you do that type of ritual, men will laugh at you, meaning humans will laugh at you. They'll say, you know, they sit there bored, and the ritual loses its potency, it loses its sacredness, and it loses its power because people don't respect the person doing it. They'll say, that person can do that type of ritual, but they're like that. Then the Dharma becomes hollow, empty. Second is, when you do that type of ritual, the supernatural beings around, they know. The low-level ones know, but the high-level ones know. And when the high-level ones look at you, they're happy and not happy. The low-level ones will sense their master's unhappiness, happiness, they will attack you. And they'll follow you, or they'll ruin. Or, when you're doing rain rituals, they make a rain run on you. You look even more stupid. So when we have jealousy, rituals will not be effective. At all. Never mind rituals. People around us won't respect us. So what happens is, this deep jealousy comes from what? Insecurity. This insecurity comes from what? We know we have done nothing, and we've accomplished nothing. And because we've accomplished nothing, we have nothing to show, so we have to do other tactics to cover. And what happens is with time is we have to do more and more tactics. Either we do more tactics to maintain who we have around us, or we work super hard and we become more successful in what we do, but the success will not be enjoyed by everyone around us. Why? Because they don't like you. Or because I've seen that in America. Super successful real estate agents in an office that pull in thousands of dollars per month. Thousands. But nobody likes them. No one likes them. So they work even harder. They pull in more money. They work harder. They pull in more. But in the end, they're alone. They're successful. They're alone. And they climb. They have no one. They have no one. The third scenario can be a person switches from one person to another person to another person to another person, so they lose friends. And sometimes friends from the past will come and become very violent. Because in human realm, there's only certain ways we can express our unhappiness. And past friends can come and express great unhappiness and anger with us by purposely humiliating us in front of other people. Or purposely embarrassing us. Or purposely wanting to cause us physical harm. That is a result of us. One is jealousy we had toward others. Very strong. Second is, we have not rejoiced in others' happiness. Third is, we've done all those mind games to cover what we've been doing. So those will come back. You see, you can cover the mind games, but you can never escape the karma. If you feel you can escape the karma, or you don't believe in karma, or you don't have conviction in karma, then you've wasted your time. Then any rituals or sadhanas or prayers or offerings you do will have no effect. Rejoicing will not purify. Rejoicing will not create further and enhance further and also activate the previous. If you're jealous, it activates the previously accumulated karma from jealousy. You understand? It will not activate. Just like if you remain healthy, your blood pressure doesn't go up. It doesn't activate. If you remain slim, you get it?
So it is hoped that by faking it at first, you get to a point where you are not just faking, but you're also applying the four opponent paths of jealousy naturally, and thereby
right now, fight. Aren't you a writer?
Yeah.
But when you first started, weren't you faking it?
Yeah.
Well, now you are.
Thank you.
Now you're a writer. You're a real writer. You're a respected writer. And you made it on your own, and you make money from it. You are a writer right now. How good or bad is everybody's own opinion, but you are a writer. When you first started writing years back, were you a writer at that time? Did anybody think of you as a writer? No. So weren't you faking it? Now you're real. One step at a time, one day at a time, one write-up at a time.